Hey, Sarah. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Les.
It's been a minute since we did one of these.
True. That is true.
This is the first time you've done a podcast wearing your new sweater you just crocheted.
It's true.
Very nice work.
Thanks. Thanks. I enjoy that.
Refining the skill.
That hobby.
So mostly we wanted to do this because you have a workshop coming up later in the week.
I do.
But first, I wanted to talk about your new channel a little bit.
Oh, okay. That's a surprise. Great.
So for you listeners, if you don't know yet, Sarah has a new channel.
The Mindful Movement Motivation.
I really think it's great.
I'm really enjoying it. It feels like a natural evolution to the first channel, and it's sort of sparking my creativity in a way that I haven't felt like I've had in a while. So I'm enjoying it.
I could see that, and I could hear it when I listened to it. I mean, when you started doing the meditations, they're great. And also, what have you done, 400 or 500?
I've done a lot of them.
It's like, how many things are there to say?
Yeah, including a few hundred that are not on the channel that have been for clients.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I still like doing them. It's just, you know, when I think of the different creative aspects of it, it's like, okay, well, I've done that before, and I've done this before. And sometimes there are lessons or ideas that I want to impart in the meditation, and it just doesn't feel like it's the right place because people are trying to meditate,
right,
and just be, and they don't need a lecture or a lesson. Sure. So this is where the new content was born.
It's great. It's great as your husband and friend, to see you re-inspired by it and tapping into creativity again. Not that you aren't still creative in other ways. I mean, look at the sweater. That sweater, by the way, looks like it could have come with the wallpaper.
And that's true. That's true. You have a lot to say about the sweater today.
But yeah, it's really good. And I've listened to, what do you have, like a handful of them out on the new channel?
Yeah, I just started it about a month and a half ago, and I've been putting them out weekly, so maybe 6 or 7 or so.
I find when I'm listening to them that the evolution of your writing has gotten not just like more precise and clear and efficient, but I sense that all these reps of the one-on-one sessions over the years has made you wiser, like learning from your clients.
Absolutely, every session.
And that I feel is coming through in these motivations.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the first channel is about 9 years old now. And when I first started writing the meditation scripts, it was born out of both what I felt like I needed in my own practice, as well as some of the individuals that I was working with, kind of the practices that they were needing. And over the years, obviously, like you said, there's been so many of them that now this new channel, it's kind of becoming the same thing in a different way of, I want to integrate and embody these lessons in my own life and in sessions and in conversations with clients. These are some lessons that we've discussed and we've worked through together. And I just think that the mind does really well with what's familiar and what's repetitive, right? What we focus on expands. And so having an opportunity to reinforce these ideas for clients and myself, and, you know, it could be just in the background when you're walking or crocheting or gardening, you know, whatever it is, or making dinner, you know, it could just be on in the background. And you get those moments of, oh, right, yes, that's exactly what I needed to hear, or exactly how I feel. So it's just some good reminders of like the lessons and the evolution kind of in your ear or in the background. So.
Well, that's great. I get a sense. I think I understand what you're saying. It also seems relevant to this workshop you have coming up this Saturday.
Saturday, yes, 12 Eastern, but it is going to be recorded. So even if this, if you're, you know, if anyone's listening to this after the date, it'll be edited into a self-led course. So people can access it afterwards if they can't make it with me live.
But a thread that you've pulled on a little bit, really a lot lately, through your writings and the motivations and some of the meditations, mm-hmm. Are really like exploring the ideas of shame, which is what this workshop coming up is about.
Yeah.
And I assume that that's just a really common thing that you're dealing or helping people through when you're working privately.
It is. Sometimes people wouldn't necessarily label their experience as shame. That would be my interpretation. But when clients come to work with me around, you know, people pleasing in their intimate relationship, for example, that might be the symptom that they're experiencing or the issue that they're experiencing. But when we dig deeper and we look at, you know, why do you feel the need to appease or people please or give up your own needs for someone else's, it generally stems from childhood and the need to like be small, the need to not ruffle feathers, the need to make sure, you know, maybe mom was, her mood was stable and you didn't impact that. And to me, often that stems from shame. So the individual might not say, oh, I feel shame, I need to work on that. But they would say, you know, I have this people-pleasing tendency. And when we dig a little deeper, we get to understand where that was born or how that was born, then it, you know, I would maybe look at it as shame. So what I'm saying is that I don't think that...
So shame could show up in a way that you wouldn't think that it's the underlying
correct
belief that's driving it.
Correct. And
what's another example?
Another example would be an addictive behavior, let's say. So someone is wanting to stop drinking alcohol and they feel the need to have alcohol. You know, it's an addiction. But what I would look at is, well, what is the feeling below the surface that feels painful or overwhelming that you're trying to avoid or numb or suppress with the alcohol? And it might not necessarily be a conscious numbing. You know, someone doesn't consciously feel a strong feeling and say, oh, I don't want to feel that, I'm going to go have a drink to not feel that. It just becomes a pattern that you might not even know. But when we stop drinking and the thing that we're suppressing starts to come up, we might look at what those feelings are and where they came from and, you know, why they're so overwhelming and why we're choosing to suppress with alcohol. And often with addictions, there's shame below the surface.
Yeah, I feel like when I quit drinking, that first year or two, there was a lot of that stuff bubbling up, and realized that I was dealing with a lot of shame.
Yeah.
Just around, like, just in general, like how I treated people, or like a lot of lying, whether it was directed toward, like directed in all directions. Probably a
Sure.
lot of shame around, like, things I'd be hiding from you, or,
Sure.
but it's such, like, why is shame, like, we know, we get a sense that these different emotions or feelings that we have, they exist on some, like, frequency, and there seems to be, like, a hierarchy to some degree. And I don't know how exact the graphs are that talk about this or how true it is, but there's something to it for sure. Like, why is shame at the bottom of that chart? Like, why is that the lowest of all the lows?
Well, I think of shame as something maybe bigger than an emotion. I mean, there are emotions associated with it, but it's almost like the response to the emotions. Meaning, it's like, I'm trying to articulate this, and it's like a lot of layers. It's the hiding of the experience that is the shame. Shame causes us to hide parts of ourselves so that they aren't judged or they are safe
So there's like
in
a
a way.
secrecy component that comes with shame that wouldn't come with other, like, low vibe feelings.
Right. I mean, like your example of when you quit drinking, shame came up around lying and how you treated people, and what you were coming to understand through the clarity of being sober and feeling these feelings and letting them all come to the surface was that you were hiding these aspects of yourself. You didn't want that part of you to be known. And the alcohol allowed you to do that because it was hiding it from yourself, even,
Right.
you know? And in order to unburden yourself or release the shame, it has to be brought to the surface. It has to be felt, to be experienced, to be witnessed. And what usually happens when you're feeling shame within yourself is that it's witnessed by a harsh critic or a judge. And that's not fun, right? Like if you came to me to share something vulnerable and I met you with judgment or criticism, there's no way you're bringing that back to me a second time, right? You're gonna hide it. You're gonna suppress it, right? And the same thing happens when we internalize the criticism and we internalize the judgment that, you know, usually it started from something external when you're a child, some primary caregiver or authority figure shames or criticizes or judges, and you internalize that and then it's as a protective way to not be shamed from anything external, right? It drives the need for achievement and success and perfection, right? And it becomes a cycle.
Yeah, I feel like for me, it probably drive seeking approval for certain things. Like, I would do things to say, to show people, like, I'm good enough, I'm worthy. I'd like have to go out of my way
Yeah.
to like patch things up for myself
Yeah.
by being validated by others.
Yeah. How do you think you did that? Like, what are the specific examples or actions that you might have taken if you're willing to share?
I was trying to put you on the spot today.
I can share mine next, but we were just in conversation.
I mean, it might sound silly, but even like some of my current passions might have been born out of that. Like, I love cooking and feeding people. Like,
Sure.
and it's a true, and I don't, like, the way I do it now, I think it's fully out of love.
Mm-hmm.
But there might have been a part of me at one point where subconsciously, even though I still like to cook and like to feed people authentically
mm-hmm.
and like to see the response, and I mean, I just think food is a important part of our lives. And but I think there might have been part of me that's like trying to earn approval in some way, or like worth
mm-hmm.
by getting someone to say like, thanks, I like this.
Sure. Well, I do think that,
like, you did a good job with this meal, and it's like validating my
your goodness,
my goodness, my existence or something.
Yeah. Well,
like I
do,
contributed to
I do something. Think that there are many strengths and gifts that are developed from the safety strategies and the patterns that we employ to keep ourselves safe and feel like we're enough. However, it's the come from, the where you come from that makes a difference. Because right now you're saying that you cook from a place of love. And that probably feels really nourishing and not exhausting. Because you're giving, you're being generous, you're passionate about it. But if we go back in time, and I don't know if this is really the pattern that was the most prevalent for you, but if we go back in time when there was a need for validation and there was a bigger component of, I need to do this to prove my worth, that can feel very exhausting, right? It's like this managing part of you that is driving the behavior, and it feels survival based. Like, I need to fit in, I need to belong, I need to be worthy, or I won't be a part of the tribe, I won't survive. And so that behavior, because it's being driven by the survival need, it's really exhausting, and it feels like the drive is so much more intense than when it comes from a place of love and passion.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because one of the other patterns that comes to mind that I've had is over the years that I know you know of, is like wanting to be right in a conversation or a debate and trying to like convince the other person I'm right. Which at a time in our relationship earlier on, I think you felt like I was being condescending. Like talk at instead of talk to or something.
I was being steamrolled.
Yeah, I remember that. So, but, you know, it's funny. I think I shared this with you, but on a podcast a couple of months ago with Keala. Oh, I forgot his Keen, I think. Keala,
mm-hmm.
Keen.
I remember you sharing this insight.
Okay, well, we were talking about it, and, like, in real time during the podcast, I think I was uncovering where that came from. And you're right, like, it was a basic survival, keep the tribe alive, because excuse me, as a child, as my family was splitting up and for years after, I always found myself in the middle excuse me, of these like two sides, my dad being on one side and my mother and two sisters on another side. And I was always defending one side to the other. I always put myself in the middle to try to convince the others that the one that they were upset at, that their interpretation did not align with the intention of the other. And that what they thought was real wasn't real. And I felt like I had the inside track of what was real from each side, because I heard their sides.
Right.
But that convincing, it's like, if I failed at that, it means the family or the tribe dies. It was like an existential threat to me,
right,
that my family was dying if I didn't hold them together. So I created this behavior of trying to convince one side that the other side was good.
Right. Well, your parents split up when you were 4, and I met you when you were 21, and I think you still thought they might get back together.
Yeah, that's crazy. Right?
And, I mean, maybe it was a little less childlike at that stage, but the fact that you, for so many years, you were trying to get them back together, I think. And it was like you said, a survival need of, I need my people back together to feel safe, to feel worthy, to feel good enough for them to come back together. And it makes sense that you would have this drive to show one side that the other side was, you know, well-meaning, and you wanted to prove that you were right. It makes sense. But now you have this amazing skill of being able to debate and have these really interesting conversations. But I think after you were able to figure out that the drive of that survival behavior that you had adopted, it lessened the intensity of your need to be right.
Yeah, which is less exhausting. It's like, it's stressful.
Yes.
So like you're literally tapping in metabolically to stress-based energy production pathways.
Absolutely.
And having that less desirable hormonal cascade in your body or neurotransmitter profile to fight that fight. And now it's actually, I think I've even turned a corner since that podcast, where I just feel like I could see myself about like wanting to engage and just being, it's like easier to choose to just sit back and relax and be kind and not right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's more enjoyable to have conversations that way, right? You're not in a hypervigilant state. You're not trying to prove your worth. There's no striving or, you know, deriving the behavior. It's just enjoying the conversation.
Yeah. And to think, like, and I kind of have to applaud you for your awareness, because, excuse me, when I think about, I mean, we're, how long have we been, 22 years, 22 and a half years we've been married. I wonder, and I think about the generation of our parents and like, and just like the divorce rate in general.
Sure.
And how much of that just stems from a lack of resources and awareness of like these human characteristics, this part of the human condition that penetrates like all of our being. And then affects so much around us and ourselves forever. Like, I feel like our relationship's better now than ever.
I would agree.
Even though we went through so many things that I think a lot of relationships don't stay together over. Right. I think there's a pretty high percentage of relationships that literally separate or divorce going through what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider definitely myself, but really us, lucky.
Sure.
To, I don't want to say dodge that bullet, but like,
well, there was also, it's not just luck, right? We were willing to do the work, and we got married so young that we were growing up together.
Right.
And relationships really are this wonderful container to learn and grow and evolve. And like the story that you talked about in terms of the debating and the conversations, like you wouldn't have known that about yourself to learn and grow without interacting with another person.
Right.
And so we have these containers, especially like the high stakes or the intimate relationships that are, you know, most important relationships in our lives. They're really great opportunities, because we tend to be willing to be more vulnerable and more open and more ourselves. And, you know, we kind of let our protective strategies go. Like, we're not so guarded in these types of relationships, so that we can use them as a training ground.
A lot of people are, though, guarded, and it ruins those relationships. Mm.
That's true. That's true.
I guess that's what I mean. There is luck involved, like, whether it's luck to learn that that's a thing, to, you know, I mean, to have a
Well, it's also reference. Responsibility, right? We each separately took responsibility right. of our part. You know, you did a lot of work around when you quit drinking, around yourself and, you know, your patterns, and you did a lot of
yeah, I guess we
internal
both
work.
Just fundamentally value personal responsibility.
Yeah, I'd say.
So let's talk about you a little bit.
Okay.
So you wouldn't be doing so much stuff about shame unless, you know, you felt like you need something. What's going on with you that you feel you've learned about yourself in that regard that helps you be a facilitator for other people to learn more about themselves regarding this topic?
I'd say my primary pattern, I mean, we all have a lot of them, but my primary pattern is, I don't know if it's exactly the label of perfectionism, but it's definitely circling it, and there's lots of components of perfectionism and, you know, needing to do things the right way and the best way and have high achievement, probably why I own two businesses and do as much as I do.
Always trying to fix what's wrong.
Always trying to fix
Rarely
what's wrong.
Yes. Relishing in how great they are.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I think part of that was just handed down in my family line, and my father was an engineer, and he always saw the problems in everything, even though there probably weren't actually problems. He was always trying to improve and fix, and I think that I interpreted that as a child as he was trying to fix me, you know, make me better.
Like, you don't score a goal in a soccer game, and it's like he's trying to fix you so you score one next time, kind of thing?
Right. Or even if I did do well, there's always room for improvement. Gotcha. And there's always room to do it better. And I don't think he did it out of disapproval. But as a child, you know, I interpreted it as, well, there's still room for improvement, so I must not be good enough. And I think that there was a lot of that just in terms of achievement and success. And then I think with my mom...
Hold on, before you get to your mom, okay. How does that link to shame, the idea around shame that you spoke about earlier?
Well, I think I interpreted it as shame, like I'm not good, right?
And
so
you're just ashamed of not being
right. So there's a difference between you know, I did something wrong and I'm wrong, or
gotcha.
I did something wrong and I don't matter. Like, that belief of I don't matter is a big one for people who experience symptoms of shame.
It's funny you mentioned like kind of a secrecy component to it, and I remember hearing your family talk about stories of you walking around with a pillowcase over your head.
Thanks for sharing.
Like,
that with us.
Like you don't want to be seen.
Right, but it's a weird like imbalance, right? Like I would come downstairs where everyone else was, and like
and
want to be
and,
seen,
right.
Not being seen.
That's
which is
funny.
It's a weird, you know, it's just strange. But, you know, I was probably...
And you just stopped that a few weeks ago, right?
I was probably like 5 or 6, you know. But I think that with my mom, she cared a lot about what people thought. And this is where I think the shame really came in even more so.
Like others, like neighbors or...
Right. It was like, well, what will people think if you wear that? Or if, you know, if you gain some weight. That was a big thing for her growing up,
But
was
that was probably a reflection of how what she went through when she was little.
right, absolutely. And I think that to me was more interpreted as shame, like let's hide parts of ourself and or parts of me, really. And even I think I deal with that today, you
Do you
know.
feel like there's a necessary component in that context, for instance, when you're working with the shame that you feel is embedded in you around that, is it necessary to like forgive that person for their role in that?
Generally, when I work with forgiveness, it's more around forgiving yourself for adopting the beliefs and the behaviors and the patterns that would have come from the interaction. Having a bit of an understanding of, in my example, my mom's behaviors and the way that she parented and the way that she, you know, treated me. It was all out of love and care. I get that. And it was also based on her upbringing. So the understanding of that helps me to not take it out on her or blame her. So I guess in a way that is a bit of forgiveness of her, but it's like I'm taking responsibility
For your
in the
response.
situation, exactly, for my response and for my part in it. And I need to recognize, or I do recognize, but we all need to recognize that we were children when we adopted these behaviors and these beliefs and these patterns, and we didn't have the logical part of our brain fully formed. We didn't have resources that we have as an adult. So to let go of the blame of yourself is really, really powerful and important. And that's where I think the forgiveness comes in, is more about the self-forgiveness. Because it just gives you more freedom, and it lightens the load that you've been carrying.
I just believe it's basically impossible not to screw up your kids, and the best you do is hope that they grow up and learn how to handle that well
I do
and
think
grow from it.
that every single parent, myself and you included, will make mistakes. You know, each child is different, and they don't come with instruction
But
manuals.
I don't even think there's an example. Like, I don't think it's a real thing to not make a mistake.
Right, I
Like, I
agree,
don't even think
but
there's something real that you can chase. I think it's an illusion. I think no matter what you do,
I agree,
you're.
but the really important point is that you can repair. You can say to your kid, "Look, I made a mistake. I screwed up. I'm sorry. I want to make it right." And that's all you can do. But if you don't do that, then, you know, those mistakes become internalized, and the way that they received it becomes internalized, and then, you know, the cycle continues. And
It's like with every relationship, you have to, both sides have to learn. Like, you have to, like, the kid learns from the parent, good, bad, neutral, whatever. And also, in an ideal scenario, the parent recognizes the kid as their teacher
Absolutely.
and over time learns, and the relationship can grow stronger and stronger.
Yeah, I mean, we've had recent conversations with our daughter who's 21, and we're still, you know, going back and forth with her, trying to repair and trying to help her understand our perspective and our approach from, you know, multiple years before now.
I'm just grateful she hates me less than she hates you. Just kidding. Kidding. So let's talk about Saturday, the workshop. What does this look like? What can somebody expect? Who's it
Okay.
for?
I mean, probably anyone could benefit from it, but someone who might be experiencing the symptoms that could be related to shame. So people pleasing, even anxiety sometimes is driven by shame, if it's, you know, the need for perfection, the worrying, the planning, the trying to control everything, that can all be related. Those are kind of the things that I would say would be useful in this context, in this workshop.
Do you think, what about someone that's physically like not feeling well? Do you think there's a common connection with like physical manifestations, gut issues, mood? I mean, you mentioned anxiety, but mood stuff, maybe fatigue, general lethargy, or
it could be. I mean, I think that a combination approach to physiological, you know, pain or medical nature experiences, I think that kind of taking a combination approach of, you know, see your medical doctors, figure out what's going on there that you can be getting better with, but also the body
is stuck in stress from a emotional thing,
right?
Those tools are going to be limited.
Absolutely. So I'm not saying that you only use a somatic or a emotional based approach, and forget about, you know, the medical doctors or vice versa. But I think that having those two approaches together can be really useful and beneficial.
It's funny, like, I remember all the healing stories I was listening to around, like, Lyme and mold toxicity. There's just so many common things that you'd hear where people would hit a wall until they dealt with emotional stuff. And I think it makes sense. Like, because of the nervous system just running the show, if that emotional stuff has you stuck in some low-level stress response, it's like your body doesn't really believe that it's the time to do all the healing things.
Right, because absolutely. Because there's
that chronic stuckness in that fight or flight or whatever.
Right, you have to survive. Otherwise, you know, what does it matter if you're digesting properly?
Right. But also, I think when someone doesn't feel well physically, not only is it hard to connect those dots, it's hard to like hear that. It's hard to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe that you can have some kind of emotional release, and that's going to be not necessarily like a magic bullet, but like that's the pivot point,
right,
where the healing really takes off.
Well, I think of the body sensations as a messenger, right? Like if you're being delivered a package that you need to sign for, and you know, the delivery person's only job is to get you to sign for that. They cannot go on to the next job until they get you to do that. The messaging is going to just amplify, right? They may start with a knock on the door, then ring the doorbell, then like start banging on the door, kicking on the door, shouting, and it just keeps amplifying and amplifying until you finally listen or you receive the message, and then it's like, okay, I'm out of here.
Like you're going to learn to listen to your body, or you're going to be forced to.
Right, but it gets so uncomfortable that we want to do everything we possibly can to not experience it, where, you know, the way out is through.
Right.
And sometimes, like you said, your body finds a way, and it forces you into, like, you have to slow down, you have to rest, you have to listen. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger until you can't not listen.
Right. So circling back to the Saturday, so it's really for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional stuff around shame could show up in just a myriad of ways.
Mm-hmm. But I would also say that it's for someone who is ready to take some amount of responsibility. Yeah, and be willing to see themselves a little bit more clearly, even if it might feel uncomfortable.
Might sting a bit.
Right.
Might sting. Right. How long is it?
It's actually 3 hours. it'll be broken up in a lot of different sections. There's some resourcing or learning how to find ways to take care of yourself during the workshop so that you have those
Nice.
outside of it. There's some lessons, I would say, or teachings, and then we'll work into some guided practices where we're looking inward a little bit more and trying to understand ourselves a little bit better. Some journaling reflection to integrate or to kind of solidify or clarify what you experienced. And then we kind of go through that a couple different times.
Nice.
And
Is there
then,
any hypnosis in it?
oh yeah, that so
Gotcha.
all of the guided practices will be hypnosis based, but they're very specific processes to learn different things and to, you know, work through some different aspects of, like, first awareness building, understanding, getting some clarity about where the pattern started, some healing or potentially inner child work, depending on the individual. And then the third phase of it would be more integration or embodiment. And with that, because I said, you know, the mind does well with repetition and familiarity, there's going to be an additional recording to use after the workshop that
Oh,
you would
nice.
do on a regular basis to really integrate what came through.
That sounds great. And I know a lot of people probably want to work with you, and between your limited schedule, like the relationship of the demand of your time and the supply of your time, this will be, I think, a lot more accessible for a lot of people to get some of
Yeah.
your skill, your wisdom.
Yeah, it goes through a similar arc of a personalized session. Obviously, it's not as personalized or
Right.
interactive.
But I would assume people could still work on some of their personal stuff with the prompts that you'll provide.
Absolutely, yes. And then afterwards, anyone who attends live will have the recording in when it's broken down into the self-led course, so you could go through it again and work on a different issue that you might be experiencing, or if, you know, someone can't attend live, then
Nice.
it takes about a week to get it edited into the course afterwards, but it'll be available for anyone who wants it after, you know, if they couldn't make it live.
Great. Well, I
Yeah.
assume you put a link that people could click to on this if you're watching this or
Yep.
listening to this. We'll try to make a link easily available. And is there anything else you want to add about it?
No, I'm just looking forward to it. I really enjoy these teaching opportunities, and it's been a little while since I've done one of these.
You've always liked the group scenario.
I do, yes.
It's fun.
Yes.
It's
It's
in
good
many ways it's
energy.
probably better for a lot of people to have that.
Yes, and just so that people will have an understanding of what to expect in the live event is that it's a webinar-based interaction, so no one's camera is on, so it's very, you know, safe container, and you can kind of follow along in the safe space of your own home, and just, you know, enjoy the energy of the group without having to be fully seen or uncomfortable if that would make you know, feel unsafe.
Well, Sarah, with that, we'll wrap it up. Thanks for
All
walking all the way across the
right.
hall to sit with me this morning.
Thanks for having me.
It's nice to hang out with you in this capacity.
Yeah.
And maybe we should do more of these. But everybody's so busy.
Well, we should see if the audience even wants us to do more of these. Maybe they can let us know.
Oh, yeah, do that. Speaking of the audience, if you got this far, grateful for the listening.
Yes, thank
Thanks.
you.
And check out the workshop or webinar this Saturday. This will probably go out Tuesday. So you got a few days to prepare mentally. And
Yeah, and if anyone hears it after the date is over, the link will still work to get The follow along the self-paced course, yes.
Nice. All right. Well, thanks again. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you for practicing with me today. I hope you found our meditation soothing and enriching. If you are looking to deepen your practice or you're facing challenges that need a more personalized approach, I'm here to help. Consider a personalized hypnotherapy session or a personalized recording. Whether you're seeking to overcome obstacles, release emotional burdens, or cultivate greater inner peace, our customized sessions are designed to meet your unique needs and support your journey toward healing. Together, we can explore deeper levels of your subconscious, open new paths of growth, and foster lasting transformation. Go to themindfulmovement.com/Sarah, S-A-R-A, and use the code PODCAST10 to receive 10% off a personalized hypnotherapy session or a personalized recording. Thank you for joining me today, and remember, the path to your greatest self begins with a single step. Let's take that step together.